Hi, folks. Bob Main here, and you are listening to another episode of the Handgun World Show. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. I believe the Second Amendment makes all of the other amendments possible. And you've tuned into a practical show. I am not ex-law enforcement or ex-military. I'm not a gunsmith or even a firearms trainer. I'm just a regular guy. And my passion and hobby happens to be firearms. And so I talk to you about the practical owning and shooting of primarily handguns from an everyday guy's point of view. So thanks again for downloading, and let's get started with the show.
This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
Okay, so I want to talk about the 357 SIG. That's one of the topics that I would like to discuss here. You know, I want to do a little review on the 357 SIG. Now, let me tell you where this came from. You know, I listen to a lot of other podcasts, too, just like some of you probably do. And I listened to the Pro Arms podcast. I think it was episode 52 or 55, something like that. Let me just say, if you don't listen to Pro Arms, you need to listen to Pro Arms. And the whole team over there did a podcast a couple months back on the 357 SIG. I got to tell you, it was a real compelling case to be carrying a 357 SIG. I'm not going to take much away from, I'm not going to steal anything away from their podcast, all right, because it's great. And I'm not going to say that I'm anywhere near the type of a ballistics analyst that people like Masad Ayoub and Chris and the whole team over there at Pro Arms are. I'm not at that level as far as analyzing ballistics. But I just want to say I was quite impressed with what they had to say. And by the way, folks, if I sound a little bit different than normal, it's really early in the morning. I am taking advantage of some windshield time. The other person you hear in the car with me is that lady on my GPS that just keeps talking to me all the time. Anyway, I haven't memorized the route to my my early morning business appointment. I don't know when you're going to listen to this, but for me, it's 10 after 6 in the morning. So anyway, here's what I did with the 357 SIG. I don't like to talk about guns or calibers that I haven't shot or that I don't own. So I went to my favorite range in Plano, Texas, went to the Bullet Trap. It's my favorite square range. If I just want to use a square range just to go test guns and stuff, that's why I go there. That's about all only reason why I ever go there anymore. Because it's close, they got a bunch of guns to rent, and some of their defensive ammo prices are pretty good. So I use it for that. Otherwise, all my training and practicing is done either IDPA or in training courses. So I go over there and I ask to rent a 357 SIG pistol. Now, my goal was to shoot the M&P compact 357 SIG and a Glock compact 357 SIG. I'm not really all that much interested in the XD. I'm considering getting a 357 SIG. Now, I know that I said a few podcasts ago that I'm going to quit buying guns for the rest of the year and get some training and spend that money on ammo and training. That's right. For the rest of this year, no more gun purchases for me. But I'm kind of thinking about early next year, what is it that I might want to add to my battery? So I go over there. Well, they didn't have an M&P 357 SIG compact. I'm kind of disappointed. I didn't get a chance. But they did have a Glock 33 and a Glock 32. The 33 is the baby Glock, the subcompact, and the 32 is the compact size, equivalent to the Glock 19, which I'm extremely familiar with. Well, I thought to myself, what am I going to do here? And I thought, well, you know what, if I can handle this little subcompact, then I can handle the compact or the full size for sure. So I said, give me the Glock 33. So I rented that and 100 rounds of 357 SIG. And I go into the square range. Well, I didn't know what to expect. Now, I've shot 40 caliber Glocks and I've shot 45 caliber Glocks, and I've shot 45 caliber 1911s, and I've shot 40 caliber Smith & Wesson M&Ps. That's pretty much the extent of my experience of non-9mm pistols. So my immediate thoughts were, gosh, the magazine only holds 9 rounds. Plus one in the chamber, that's only a 10-round gun. Well, okay, that's not bad because it's 357 SIG. And that's only one less than the 9mm. The Glock 26 has 10 in the magazine, and you can put one in the chamber. So I'm thinking to myself, well, this isn't bad. I'm only down one round. When it comes to capacity in a compact pistol like that, this 357 SIG round is supposed to be so powerful and so good and such a good stopper that as long as I'm on target, I'm going to be okay. Well, I fired the first magazine, and here's what I got to say. To me, the recoil was not anywhere near as bad as the 40, but definitely significantly more than the 9mm. Now, I remember in that Pro Arms podcast, I remember Mass talking about how accurate the 357 SIG was. Well, what the range gave me was, I believe, some Fiocchi. It was either Fiocchi or PMC. I can't remember. One of those two. Just, you know, basic range ammo. That's what I was shooting. Now, I made a mistake, and I'm going to probably have to go back there and shoot some defensive ammo, because all I shot was just FMJ range practice ammo, you know, which is going to be softer loaded than the hot ammo. I think they sell some Speer Gold Dot and some Corbin 357 SIG there. That's what I need to go back and shoot. I need to see how that's going to feel. But in this podcast, let me tell you what I thought of the range ammo. Again, definitely more recoil, but you know what? More recoil than the 9mm, but I didn't have any problem staying on target. Now, maybe it's my familiarity with shooting Glocks, maybe because I have so much time with Glocks, maybe I can pick up any kind of a pistol like that and start shooting it, but I roll a target out there to 7 yards, and I fire the first magazine, and they're all in the red circle, and I'm like, whoa, all right, this is good. I mean, I have to admit, sometimes with my 9... with my Glock 19, I don't put them all in the red circle. Now, again, I didn't have any problem getting on target fairly quickly. So the next magazine I use strong hand only. Not bad. Of course, my groups were a little bit wider, but not bad. Strong hand only. Then I fire another magazine, weak hand only. Because I'm thinking to myself, all right, here's the true test. Is what can I do weak-handed? And let me urge all of you, if you test out a pistol, don't just stand there freestyle with your strong hand and your weak hand support and plink away and think that you can handle a pistol. Use it strong hand only, use it weak hand only, and do the best you can to try to do a variety of shooting when you test something out. So that's what I did. Weak-handed, I had no problem controlling it. I was surprised. Again, significantly more pronounced recoil, but not out of control. The muzzle blast, yes. I mean, what they say about the muzzle blast on the 357 SIG, woo, man. It's actually kind of fun, but there could be some negatives to that, too. So, I was impressed with the controllability. Now, this Glock 33 had the magazine extension on it, so I could get my pinkies on the grip. The other thing I forgot to do is I forgot to stick the regular length mag in there, which will give me a dangling pinky. I forgot to put that in there and fire that subcompact 357 SIG. So there'll be another podcast that I'll do probably in a week. I'll go back there and I'll use defensive ammo and I'll do weekend and strong hand without the magazine extension, and I'll report it to you and let you know what I find out. But, you know, not bad, folks. And I got to say, one of the advantages of that gun, too, if you're thinking about owning a gun like that, is that you really have three guns in one. The 357 SIG Glock, you can put a 40 caliber barrel in there with no problem, because the 357 SIG, the case of it is the size of a 40 caliber. And, of course, the bullet is necked down to a .355 or .357 diameter bullet, whatever it is. And it's just going extremely fast. And, of course, supposedly, you know, you need to go back and listen to that Pro Arms podcast. But that's the big advantage right there of that cartridge, is that the speed at which it's going and the foot-pounds of energy of transfer is enormous. But, again, I'm not going to go into all that stuff that I don't know too much about. That's not a good wouldn't be a good service to you, the listener, for me to be going into that. I'm just going to talk about my personal experiences as to what happened when I shot this thing. So accuracy, I was fairly impressed. So you got three guns in one. You can put a 40 caliber barrel in there, and you can buy a Lone Wolf conversion barrel that'll convert that caliber down to a 9mm for you. If you look at that conversion barrel, it's wider than a typical 9mm barrel where the chamber is, because the breech face of that Glock pistol, and I believe you can do the same thing with M&Ps. I'm pretty sure that Smith & Wesson M&P sells M&Ps. They sell 40 caliber M&Ps with a replacement 357 SIG barrel. So the diameter of the chamber, or the outer area of the barrel where the chamber is the same for 357 or 40 caliber. Now, there are some people that say you have to change out the extractor if you're going to convert it down to a 9mm. I don't know about that. Some people say you don't. Some people say you do. All I know is that Wolf does make a 40 caliber down to 9mm conversion barrel that you can also use in that gun. So for practicing, I don't know if I would ever carry it that way. If I was going to carry a Glock 33 chambered in 357 SIG, I'm going to carry it that way, because that's the purpose of buying it, because I want to carry 357 SIG. I have other 9mm guns. If I want to carry a 9mm, I have other guns for that. But for practicing, some people like to use those conversion barrels because 9mm ammo is cheaper to reload, easier to reload, and cheaper to buy if you're like me and you don't reload. So you've got three guns in one. Now, I kind of like that. I kind of like that because of ammo availability. All right, think about it. If we get another pinhead elected president, or if we get a lot of pinheads elected to Congress that want to try some more, threaten some more gun control and stuff like that, you might see a scarcity of some of the ammo, some of the calibers like 9mm and 45. Because think about it, those are the two most popular handgun calibers, aren't they? 9 and 45. Maybe you could throw 40 in there because of its widespread law enforcement use. I remember when the ammo shortage of about a year and a half ago, we were right in the middle of it. You could find all kinds of 10mm and 357 SIG, and even a pretty fair amount of 40 caliber. But you couldn't find any 9mm, you couldn't find any 45. Those were like next to impossible. And 380, forget about it. You couldn't find any of that either. So, you know, because those are the guns that most people have. So the beauty of having a M&P or a Glock or an XD that's chambered in 357 or chambered in 40 is that you can interchange those barrels and basically have three calibers in one gun. And that is, you know, I'd say there's definitely an advantage to that. If you're a reloader and, you know, you want to load up some different 40 caliber loadings and try those, you can stick a 40 caliber barrel in that Glock or in the M&P, and you can shoot your 40 caliber. So again, the versatility of it is what I really, really like, and that's what I was impressed with. I didn't actually do that at the range because, you know, it wasn't my gun, it was their gun. And what I would like to do before I consider early next year making a purchase on a gun like this, because I'm kind of thinking about carrying 357 SIG. I don't know why. I know that all handguns suck. I know that. I did a whole podcast on that all handguns suck, all the rounds suck. But man, I tell you what, listening to that Pro Arms podcast has got me thinking that maybe out of all the guns I could carry, out of all the calibers that I could carry, in terms of raw stopping power, maybe that 357 SIG is a good option. In fact, I believe that the air marshals have gone to it, and I believe a lot of law enforcement has gone to it. Not sure if the FBI, but I know that some police departments have switched to the 357 SIG. You got to listen to the Pro Arms podcast on that. So, if it's good enough for them, it's good enough for me. Does that mean I'm abandoning the 9mm? Absolutely not. The interesting thing is I did take my Glock 19 with me. And I loaded up some Corban DPX, and I shot that right after I shot the 357 SIG. Now, I got to tell you, the Corban DPX, which is supposed to be some high-quality defensive ammo, still recoiled less than the 357 target practice ammo. So this 357 stuff is hot. It is hot loaded, folks, so get ready. If you've never shot that caliber, it's hot, but not uncontrollable. I shot 40 caliber Glocks, and I don't care for them. I really don't. The 40 caliber M&P is tolerable. The 40 caliber XD I didn't really care for. The only gun that I really care for in 40 caliber, just personal opinion now, folks, is the Smith & Wesson M&P. They've done a fabulous job building that gun to shoot 40. It works great. And, of course, I've shot 45 caliber polymer guns and, of course, plenty of 45 1911s. But what I'm looking for is a lightweight subcompact that has plenty of smack if I have to use it. That's kind of what I'm looking for, and that's why I'm checking out this 357 SIG. Now, the other thing I want to say about it is, boy, it sure is not cheap. That's one of the downsides, is that if you plan on taking a two-day, 1,000-round training class with 357 SIG, not only are you going to spend a lot of money, but your hands are probably going to hurt like hell when you're done. Somebody that's on the somebody that's on the forum, I think it was, or maybe somebody sent me a private email. I can't remember if they're on the forum or a private email. Actually, I think the guy sent me a PM, and he said that he actually took a two-day course with a 357 SIG, and he said his hand hurt for a couple of days after that. So just think about that, you know, and one of the downsides, one of the things that, I mean, I absolutely love that gun. I mean, that Glock 33 would be perfect for me. I absolutely love it. But the thing that is really making me hesitant about picking that up early next year is that I just don't think that I would put the time in practicing with it. And see, to me, that's important. To me, practice is the most important thing. Training and practice, there's nothing more important than that. Because I want to be able to shoot that and shoot it effectively and defend myself if a bad guy's coming after me. Right? I mean, isn't that why we do this, folks? Isn't that why we carry these guns? Right? We do it because we want to be effective. And so many people get so hung up on caliber, and I'm really trying to resist the urge to do that right now. So I'm asking myself the question, even as I dictate this podcast, I'm thinking, would I spend enough time on that gun to get proficient with it? Because standing there and plinking at the range and putting them all in the little 4.5-5-inch circle, that's not self-defense. So I can't just judge based on that whether I could use this gun to defend myself. 9mm, especially in Glocks and in M&Ps, whew, man, I've got thousands and thousands of rounds of practice and training with those guns. And my skills and my confidence is getting bigger, better and better as to where I could put those rounds. So that's kind of one of my concerns. Even though it's a fabulous cartridge, folks, I don't reload. And by the way, I've heard that it's very difficult to reload for 357 SIG. So I don't reload. And I don't know if I have the kind of money to be buying thousands of rounds every year of 357 SIG in order to go out and practice with it, which is what I would need to do to feel comfortable with carrying that gun. Again, I want to know that I have the confidence and the ability and the practice to put the shots where I want them. And that's one of the reasons why I love my high-capacity Glock 19s, because I got 16 chances to hit the bad guy. Or if there's multiple attackers, I got 16 rounds on board before I have to reload. To me, that's a huge plus. So there you go. That's a little bit longer than I wanted to talk about on that caliber, but there's my initial thoughts of the 357 SIG, at least in the Glock. Like I said, I didn't get a chance to shoot the M&P. They didn't have one. I got a feeling it wouldn't be too much different. That M&P compact, it's a little bit larger than a Glock 26. It's actually more comparable in size to a Glock 19 or a Glock 23 or an XD 4-inch, but I don't think it would be too much different than the Glock that I shot. Okay, the next thing I want to talk about is a boneheaded mistake I made the other day. And I want to tell you what I did and point this out so that you don't make the same mistake I did. I was shooting IDPA the other day with my Glock 19, obviously, as I'm doing for the next year. Well, through two stages, I had like six or seven stovepipes, and I couldn't figure out what the heck was going on. First, I thought it was ammo. I thought my Glock didn't like the ammo that I was shooting, and then I realized that's usually not the case. Usually, Glocks will eat and shoot anything. So then I thought, well, something's got to be wrong with the timing, because I was getting stovepipes like crazy out of two stages. I had like about seven stovepipes, and it just, all different kinds of ammo, 115 grain, 147 grain, 124 grain, it didn't matter. I'm sticking different types of ammo in the gun, thinking it was ammo related. Then somebody suggested to me that obviously the timing of the gun was just way, way off. I couldn't figure it out. And I don't know what told me to do this, but I go back to the safe area and I field stripped my Glock 19 after I was done shooting a stage. Well, lo and behold, I noticed after I field stripped it, there was something odd about it. Just something really weird that didn't look right. Here I am, I'm looking at the frame, I'm looking at the slide, the barrel, the recoil, guide rod, and the spring, and something's just not right. But I still couldn't figure out what it was. Another shooter who was taking a break at the same time came up and he looked at my gun field stripped on the safe table, and he says, "Bob," he said, "you got the wrong recoil spring in there." And we looked at it and went, "What?" And then we looked at it a second time. Sure enough, guess what? I had the recoil spring from a Glock 17 in my Glock 19. I'll tell you how that happened in a moment. But what was happening is that's too much spring. And what was happening is, as the rounds were firing and the spring was compressing, the spring was too large, so it wasn't allowing the slide to retract all the way, and it wasn't properly extracting my rounds, and that's what was causing the stovepipes. I had a Glock 17 and a Glock 19 spring. I had a Glock 17 spring inside of a Glock 19. Here's how that happened. Now, be careful, folks. What I did is I cleaned my Glock 34 and my Glock 19 at the same time. About a week ago, I cleaned them at the same time. Well, guess what I did? The recoil spring on a Glock 34 is the same as a Glock 17. I interchanged the springs. So, lo and behold, I get home, I field strip my Glock 34. What do I find? I find the recoil spring from the Glock 19 in the Glock 34. Be careful. Don't clean two guns that are similar of different sizes. Don't clean them at the same time. That's what I did. I mean, I remember doing it. I field stripped them both. I cleaned out the barrels, did my typical cleaning regimen with both of the guns on the table. Don't do that. Clean one, put it away, go get the next one, clean it, put it away, because you might interchange parts. Now, if you're cleaning, if one's a Glock and one's a 1911, then of course you're probably not going to interchange parts that way, but be careful. Now, as a testimony to how reliable the Glocks are, you would think that it was stovepipe every time, but it didn't. It ran most of my ammo without a hitch, with the wrong recoil spring in it. So that's how reliable these guns are. And, of course, once I put... And by the way, I had an extra recoil spring in my range bag. And, by the way, there's a reason to always carry extra recoil springs and extra parts in your range bag. In case you screw up, like I did, you can quickly swap it out. As soon as I did that, as soon as I put the correct recoil spring in there, went back to the match, ran, no problem, three more stages without a hitch. I was getting a little worried. I thought, there's something wrong with my Glock, which is highly unusual. But remember I said in the previous segment that if somebody tells you that they don't have any problems, that they're probably lying to you? Well, some problems, folks, are user error. Now, in this case, it was not the gun's fault. But, I've been guilty of doing stupid stuff like just not having a real good firm grip and limp wristing before. And, of course, guess what happens? You're going to have malfunctions. Now, here's the positive thing. I lost a heck of a lot of time. That was the negative thing. But the positive thing is I got some good malfunction clearance practice, which was, I guess, that's a good thing. You always need to practice clearing malfunctions. Anyway, just be careful if you're cleaning two guns that are exactly the same or two guns that are very similar. Make sure you put the correct parts in the correct gun. Stupid me, but I wanted to share it with you so you don't do the same thing. Thing, by the way, you might be wondering, how does that happen? How do you interchange springs? I put a metal guide rod in my Glock. I buy a Wolf guide rod, and of course it's a non-captured spring. So, and the reason I do that is because, first of all, I prefer a steel guide rod. One thing that bothers me about Glocks is they put a stupid plastic guide rod in there. I know there's people that say that they've never had any problems with those plastic guide rods. I don't know, just something about it. I feel more comfortable having a steel guide rod, and I use a non-captured, which means that little lip or thingamajig, whatever the hell you call it, on the other end of the spring that's holding it in there. So, you know, it makes it a little bit more difficult to reassemble, but not a big deal. You can see my ignorance, my gunsmithing ignorance coming through, can't you? You can probably hear that. Anyway, because I'm using a non-captured spring, that's how I got those interchanged like that. Obviously, if you're using a captured spring, one that's too large is not going to fit in there because the guide rod will be too long. So just watch that. The other thing that I wanted to share with you about what happened at IDPA the other day is I was shooting my 147 grain ammo that I bought. I bought some Ranger 147 grain full metal jacket, flat nose. And I love that stuff for practicing. It's very, very soft shooting. It's subsonic ammo. So it's very, very soft shooting, and I like it. And I also like the fact that when I'm shooting indoors, it's not quite as loud. So I use that for the indoor matches, and then I use my FMJ 115s, 115 grains, for outdoor matches. I just like the way that the 147 grains feel, and I like the recoil better. And by the way, I just recently, I've been experimenting with some 147 grain Ranger SXTs for carry. 147 grain, they're the old Black Talon bullets. They look just like the Black Talon bullet, it's just that they're not black. I'm pretty sure it's almost the same bullet, but Winchester had to be politically correct and quit making the Black Talons, which is an idiotic story, a stupid story, but they had to do it just to please some of the gun haters out there. But it's really the same stuff, just under a different name, and it's a copper-plated bullet instead of the color black. Love that stuff. Feels really good, and you might want to give that a try. So enough about ammo and springs and stuff like that. The next topic I want to talk about is a little bit of listener feedback that was posted on the forum recently. A lady who listens to my show put a post on the Gun Rights Radio Network forum talking about dealing with anti-concealed carry people. This is a good subject here. Dealing with anti-concealed carry people. And she says that she has family members. She has family members, like, for example, her mother. Her mother is anti-gun, and her father is anti-women having guns. And her question is, does anybody have any ideas on how to handle situations like this when we are visiting them? So, let me handle that. Let me talk about that. Here's my opinion for what it's worth. Who cares? Who cares what their opinions are? I know it's your mother, I know it's your father. First of all, your father, anti-women, carrying guns. Let me refer you to episode 68, and I responded to this listener's question. And in episode 68, I played a 911 call. An actual 911 call, got it off of YouTube, it's public record. It's a 911 call released by the police about a lady who was attacked, and she's lucky that she had a gun. She was attacked in her own home. So, ma'am, I want to encourage you and anybody else who is listening to this podcast right now that has family members that are anti-gun, email them that 911 call. It's very provocative. Email them that call and ask them to then tell you what they think of it. After they listen to that, if they're still anti-gun, if they're still anti-women carrying guns, then I'm sorry, folks. They're a lost cause. Your relatives that are thinking that way are a lost cause. You're never going to win them over anyway. If they listen to that 911 call, oh, man, if they listen to that and they're still anti-guns. See, I'm convinced of this. Now, if I'm all screwed up with these comments, folks, please don't hesitate to let me know about it. But I think the reason why people are anti-gun, the biggest reason why people have anti-gun feelings is because they don't know anything about guns. So they're naturally afraid of them. And the only thing that they do know is what TV, Hollywood, the news media feeds them. The media feeds them garbage. Information on how guns are violent. Guns are violent. It's not guns that are violent, folks. It's people who are violent. But the anti-gun media out there, and sometimes even a little bit Hollywood, it feeds people the idea that guns are violent, and they're not. I'm also a firm believer that the majority of anti-gun people have never owned one and have probably either never shot a gun or very rarely ever shot a gun. And it's amazing. There's all kinds of stories that I get. And folks, I get emails like crazy from people saying, "Hey, Bob, I just got my first handgun and I've never owned a gun before. I've had family members and parents that raised me and they were anti-gun and so forth. But something happened to them. Something happened to them to all of a sudden wake them up, and now they realize that carrying a gun makes a lot of sense." I'm a firm believer that most of these anti-gunners are people that have never gone shooting. You know what? To this listener who put the post on the forum, take your parents shooting with you. Seriously, take them shooting. I don't care if you have to rent a .22 pistol. Put a .22 pistol in their hand. Get them some basic instruction. Ask the range safety officer to give them some basic safety instructions if they've never shot a gun before, and take them shooting. If they've shot before, get them out to the range. It is absolutely amazing, folks. I want to share with you. It is amazing the transformation that takes place in people. After they go shooting, they seem to just all of a sudden warm up to the concept of firearms. Not always, but it happens a lot. And you know what really confuses me? I don't get this one. I don't get people that have a problem with us exercising our Second Amendment rights. Okay, these same people have no problem with the First Amendment. Okay, free speech is okay. Freedom of religion is okay. They have no problem with the Fifth Amendment, the right to remain silent. They have no problem with any other part of the Constitution. They believe in the rights that we have. You know, and to my international listeners, you know, I know you may not know much about the United States Constitution, but, you know, it protects a lot of God-given rights. And people have no problem with us exercising any of our other rights, but no, don't own a gun. Oh no, you can't do that. You can't have your Second Amendment rights. What's up with that? Why are they so anti-Second Amendment? See, and again, I think it goes back to my previous point, because they're fed a bunch of garbage. They're fed a bunch of garbage and a bunch of lies by the likes of the Brady campaign and many of the other anti-gun politicians and anti-gun media that somehow these guns just cause violence by themselves, and that is absolutely 100% garbage. So, ma'am, take them shooting. And who cares? I don't care what people think about me when I carry a gun. I don't care that they know I carry a gun. I'd prefer that they not know. And because I keep it very well concealed, most of the time people don't know when I'm carrying it, and that's good. I want it to stay that way. But there are people who know me, and obviously all of you who listen to this show, but there's also people who know me personally that know that I carry all the time. I don't care. I don't care what people think of it. It is my right. I'm going to do it. I want to live. The reason I carry a gun is because I want to live. I joke about the fact that I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. But it's true, I want to live. And that's my right. So, all right, that's enough of that rant. Hopefully that that helps the person that put the comment on the forum put the post on there. But email that 911 call around and just, you know, find out what they think after they listen to that. Okay, let me just cover a news story real quick next. This is kind of interesting because it actually is something that's probably going to upset you if you're a firearms lover. The story is about a gun shop that opened in a Carrollton, Texas neighborhood, which is sparking a lot of controversy. Now, this was posted originally on the forum by James, my shooting buddy, who also goes by the name of Iowa Surfer. Carrollton, for those of you who are not real familiar with North Texas, and again, for those of you who listen to me internationally, it's a suburb of the Dallas-Fort Worth area. All right, Big Slim's Firearms just recently opened up in suburb of Carrollton. And the controversy is because residents who live in a nearby neighborhood called the Highlands Subdivision, which is less than a mile from Big Slim's Firearms, found out about the store's grand opening. And there's a resident by the name of Kay Sellers. And Kay tells the media, she says, "Oh my God, my son was bicycling in the neighborhood, and he came home and he said, 'Mommy, guess what? There's a gun shop that opened up in the neighborhood.'" Yeah? So what? So what, ma'am? Okay, a gun shop opened up near your neighborhood. What does that mean? So what? What's the big deal? Just because there's a store there selling guns, how is that going to hurt you? See, I don't understand. How is that going to affect these residents of the Highlands? You know, one of the residents, Joe Seaton, he says, "I think I'm going to move out of the area." Yeah, I hope he does. I hope he does move out of the area. Just because there's a gun shop there doesn't mean anything. Okay? You know, do these people not realize criminals don't buy guns at gun shops? Criminals get their guns illegally. A criminal cannot walk in there and buy a gun from Big Slim's Firearms in Carrollton, Texas. I went to Big Slim's last week. I went over there. I checked it out. I had to see what all the fuss was about. And I really don't understand what these residents of the Highlands are worried about. This is a very innocuous gun store. It's not very noticeable. And it's really not all that close to their neighborhood. And like I said, so what? Listen to this dolt, this numbskull. Joe Seaton, one of the residents, "With all of the other issues we're having in the neighborhood with violence and thefts and break-ins, with this gun store, it's even worse." Really? Does he think that the people committing all these violence and all the break-ins are going to stop there at Big Slim's a mile away, buy a gun, fill out the 4473 form, try to pass a background check, and then drive over to his neighborhood and commit some crime? See, this is plain ignorance, folks, and this is the job that we have to do. Those of us who are law-abiding citizens that believe in the Second Amendment, we got to educate the public. It's one of the reasons why I do this podcast. Seriously, I'm trying, and it's one of the reasons why I set an example. Every day that I put that gun on my belt, it's one of the reasons I set an example. I try to do that and do this podcast. We have some education to do. See, ignorant people, and really, these residents are ignorant. And, you know, I'm not trying to, you know, cut anybody down. When I say they're ignorant, I'm just saying they lack knowledge about how guns are purchased and what people have to do and go through to buy a firearm. The criminals are not going to do it. There's all kinds of guns that criminals can get their hands on illegally. They can steal them. And it doesn't matter whether Big Slim's Firearms is a mile or 100 miles away from the Highlands neighborhood in Carrollton, Texas. It doesn't matter. Joe Seaton, Kay Sellers, it doesn't matter. If you have a problem with crime in your neighborhood, it's because the criminals are getting guns elsewhere. They're not going to get the guns over there at Big Slim's Firearms. So what's really interesting is I stopped into Big Slim's Firearms because it's not that far from my house. And, you know, the guy's prices are a little high, but you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go by there tomorrow, and I'm going to buy a couple boxes of ammo from him. I'm going to support him. All right, I'm going to financially support him by buying stuff. I want him to stay in business. I want him to flourish now. I do. I want him to be fabulously successful with that gun store. I think he's going to have to lower his prices on a couple things. Some of the guns were decently priced, and some of them were way out of the ballpark. And you know what? The owner was a really nice guy. I told him who I am. I told him a little bit about what I do, my hobby, and so forth. And he said, well, what do you think? He said, what do you think of some of my prices? And I gave him some honest opinions. He had a couple pistols there that were way out of the ballpark. He had a couple of them that were priced just right. So he said, thank you. And he's a really super nice guy. And what the media did was they actually gave this gun shop some press coverage. And he said, you know, the guy that was running the store, he said, you know, people have been coming in here like crazy because they want to see what I'm all about. They heard the news story and they're coming in. That's good. I think that's great. You know what really pisses me off? The city of Carrollton, Texas, the city council now, wants to pass a city ordinance regulating the opening of firearms stores in their neighborhood. That should not be allowed. This is the United States of America. People should be able to open up any kind of business that they can open up legally anywhere that they want. I know that there's zoning and I know that there's restrictions. Look, you know what? Too bad, Carrollton. You know, you guys were asleep at the wheel. Too bad. But I don't like government interfering with business. I just don't. That's just not me. That's not what this country was founded upon, folks. We were not founded upon government regulating business. That is not free enterprise. Overregulation. And when a city tries to tell businessmen and women what they can open and where they can open it and start to crack down just because they sell those evil black rifles in their store, that's crap. Obviously, you guys can tell I'm a little cranky on this issue, can't you? This bothers me. This bothers me. Something about this, I don't know. Something about this just doesn't smell right here. So, anyway, that's the story about Big Slim's Firearms, and that's pretty much the news, the end of the news and the comments that I wanted to talk about on this episode.
The forums are a great place to interact with the podcasters and other listeners to your favorite podcast. Visit GunRightsRadio.com and click on the forums button at the top of the page and sign up for your free membership. GunRightsRadio.com.
Okay, so finally, let me go ahead and get to the main topic that I wanted to talk about today. Sorry it took me so long to get to this point, but I had a few things there that I had to get off my chest and give you that IDPA update and so forth and talk to you about Big Slims and so on and so forth. So as I make my way here in my vehicle to my next appointment, I want to talk about carrying big guns. And I think it's important that that I talk about this topic because I've really never said anything about it before. Carrying big guns. Now, what's a big gun? Well, some people think that a big gun means a big bore caliber. Others think that big in size is a big gun. Some people think that a large gun is more intimidating than a small gun. And they may have an argument there that could be pretty valid, that sometimes big guns are more intimidating. But I think the idea that a bad guy is going to pee his pants and run away just because you pull out a big gun, I think you're sorely mistaken if you think that's going to be the reality. I think today's criminals are a lot more bold than that, a lot braver. And I don't think the size of the gun is going to matter. I think it's your attitude, your mental state, and whether they can figure out whether they think you're actually going to use that weapon or not. You know, a lot of it is the body language that you project. That's what it is. A lot of it is the body language. You know, let's not forget something about communication. Communication between two people, even if it's a bad guy versus good guy situation. Communication, folks, is, I've heard anywhere from 70 to 85% nonverbal. So if that bad guy is trying to do something to you and you are communicating nonverbally, hey, buddy, you know what? I'm going to shoot you if you go any further. I don't think it matters what size gun you have in your hand at all. I don't think it matters whether it's a small little pocket size 380 or whether you got a 44 Magnum. If the person knows you are willing to use it and there's a good chance they're going to get shot by it and you may even shoot them multiple times, I think that's going to go a long way to helping you survive. Again, for those of you who are kind of new to my show, don't think that I'm some kind of a barbaric person advocating violence. I'm talking about a self-defense situation where a person has a right to live. So should you carry a big gun? Yeah, I think so. I think you should carry the biggest gun you possibly can. Now, you've probably heard that from lots of people. A lot of people, when they're asked the question, what gun should I carry? The standard answer is carry the largest gun you can comfortably conceal and comfortably and controllably shoot. Now, regardless of all the information that we are bombarded with all these wonder holsters and smarter than average holsters and things like that, the fact of the matter is the best that we can hope for is a carry system that is tolerable, in my opinion. I mean, you think about it. Okay, if you're going to carry a large gun, there's a lot of merit for carrying a large gun. Now, some people think a full-size 1911 is a large gun, and anything smaller than a full-size 1911 is a small gun. I happen to think that my Glock 19 or a gun similar to that, like an XD9 compact or an M&P compact or something like that, or a commander-sized 1911, I happen to think that those are rather large guns. I mean, given the fact that there's a lot of different guns out there, small little pocket-sized 380s, little bitty Derringers and things like that, when you compare it to those guns, a Glock 19, Glock 23, M&P 45 compacts, you know, commander-sized 1911s, compared to those little pocket guns, that's a large gun. And I think it's a large enough gun. Remember, there's always going to be a compromise, and I love to use the phrase, I've borrowed this, I didn't make this up by any means. There's a lot of people that I've heard say this, but carrying a gun does not need to be comfortable, it just needs to be comforting. If you have a carry system that's tolerable, if you have a good holster, if you have a good belt, like I mentioned in the last podcast, it's going to be tolerable, and you'll get used to it. You know, I got to admit something to you folks. When I first put my Glock 19 inside my waist on my belt, and I first started carrying it 330 position, when I put that on, I went, oh, this is going to suck. All right? It was so uncomfortable. It really was. And let's see, I think at that time I was using a Galco inside the waistband holster, and I never got enough. I know there's a lot of people out there that like Galcos. Galcos just didn't work for me. And it was just really uncomfortable. And somebody said to me, Bob, be patient, you'll get used to it. So I want to urge you, I want to talk to you about the 21-day rule. Bob Main's 21-day rule about carrying a gun. It takes 21 days pretty much to build a habit. If you do something consecutively for 21 days, it'll start to become habit. That's kind of a proven psychological phenomenon. If you do something for 21 straight consecutive days, you can start to make it a habit, and you can get used to it. Whatever gun you choose to carry, carry it for 21 straight days and use your carry method. So, for example, if it's something like a Glock 19 23, if it's something like an XD9 40, if it's something like an M&P 40 or even an M&P 45, or if it's a Commander 1911 or even a full-size 1911 or a revolver or a four-inch barrel revolver, whatever it is, carry it 21 straight days with your preferred holster and your preferred belt. I promise you, after 3 weeks of carrying that, you're going to get used to it. And you know what happens? An interesting phenomenon takes place. All of a sudden, if you go a day without carrying it, it feels weird. It does. I've heard people say that it feels like going naked. It feels weird, folks. It really does. And I get this strange, weird feeling like something is really, really missing if my Glock 19 is not on my belt now. I mean, seriously, it really, I promise you, try me on this. If you don't believe me, try me. Now, if after 21 days, or 25 days, or 30 days, if it's just still miserable, then you might want to consider changing guns or changing holsters or belts. Now, if it's a big 38-ounce 1911, there are some people who love to carry those. I'm not one of them, okay? Not because I hate the gun, just because it's too heavy. Load that thing up with 230-grain ammo, 45 caliber ammo, load that thing to the hilt, and that's a heavy piece, okay? All-day carry in that, no matter what holster and belt I use, for me, is not all that comfortable. Yeah, it's comforting, but to me, my Glock 19 is just as comforting, knowing that I have 16 rounds of Corban DPX 115 grain, or Ranger SXT 147 grain. Knowing that I've got that, it's comforting to me. Now, there's a couple things I would like to urge you to consider. You've all heard the concept dress around your gun. I have to say that I'm not a huge believer in dressing around your gun. If you're trying to conceal this monster of a gun. You see, that's one of the reasons why I like these compact models of pistols. The type where I can get a full firing grip, but it's still small enough to conceal. It's why I've kind of moved away from my Glock 26 quite a bit and my Kar PM9. Even though I still own those guns and I still carry them from time to time, the reason I've kind of moved away, kind of giving those guns a back seat, is because it's hard for me to get a full firing grip the way I would like to. And you know what? The draw is so much slower. I think about what if I have to use my gun, folks. I know a lot of people carry around small little mouse guns, and I do that. I carry around small little mouse gun. It's in my pocket as a backup. I want you to try something. Go take a 2-day training class with a mouse gun. Go take an 800-round, 2-day gunfighting course with a mouse gun. Go do that with a 38 snub revolver. Try that. Get a 357 Magnum revolver, load it up even with 38 special, even just target loads, and go do a 2-day gunfighting course. Tell me how you feel. How do your hands feel? How do you feel about that gun after you've been through 2 days worth of intense gunfighting? Even just shoot a long IDPA or USPSA match with it. Try that. Take your mouse gun and shoot a regular IDPA or USPSA match that's going to be 140, 150 rounds, moving, shooting, multiple targets, multiple threats, things like that. Just do that. Go experience that, and you tell me how it feels. You tell me what that's like with a small little gun like that. And why am I making this point? Because if that's your primary carry gun, what's going to happen when you have to use it? What's going to happen if you do have to face multiple threats? What's going to happen if you do have to make a precision shot? What if you find yourself in that oh crap situation that I hope you never get into, and you have to revert to all that training? It's so much easier and it's nicer to train with a larger gun. So guess what? Carry that larger gun. Make the effort to conceal it. If you do have to dress around your gun, if you have to buy your pants larger, if you have to buy your shirts larger to help hide the gun, well then I guess do it if that's what you have to do. I'm not a big fan of that. You know what I did? You know, when I first read buy your pants one or two sizes larger to fit your gun in it, I said screw that, I'm not going to buy larger pants. I'm going to lose 25 pounds. So I did. I lost 25 pounds. All of a sudden, now those pants fit real good. They fit great with a Glock inside the waistband. So think about that. It's healthier, too. But if that's not an option for you, and let's say a Smith & Wesson M&P is the only gun that you have right now, and you want to start carrying that, well then go invest in some pants that are one or two sizes larger than normal, and get a really good belt and get a really good holster that I've talked about, and maybe you won one of the holsters on the Freedom Raffle, all right? So have CompTac make you one of those nice MTAC holsters. They are so comfy. They're so nice. But carrying a gun is always going to be a compromise of some sort. Now, I don't allow compromises to undermine my security. And what I mean is, in the winter, sometimes I will be carrying a bigger gun. Sometimes I'll put my Glock 34. I'll carry that occasionally. Sometimes in the winter. Here in North Texas, believe it or not, a lot of people don't realize it, but we can sometimes get some pretty cold winters, and you got to put a lot of clothes on. And it's not like when I grew up in Wisconsin, of course. Nothing, anything close to that. Gosh, up in Wisconsin, you could probably, if they had concealed carry up there, if those pinhead politicians would get their head out of their you-know-what up in Wisconsin and let them conceal carry, gosh, you could probably carry a full-size 1911 10 months out of the year with plenty of good clothes on. All right? But anyway, here in Texas, we can sometimes get, in North Texas at least, we can get some pretty cold weather. So I'm wearing a lot of stuff. And so sometimes I'll carry my Glock 34, at the bare minimum, the Glock 19. Now, let me talk about my Car P380 and my Car PM9. Those are my small guns. Those are my small deep concealment guns. I understand that you may go into an NPE environment, non-permissible environment, where it's absolutely essential that you never get caught carrying. I understand. You may be in that situation. Those are my NPE guns, my little mouse guns. That's what I use them for. Those are when I just absolutely can never take a chance of getting made carrying my Glock 19. And folks, that is their only purpose. Those are niche guns. Those are the only purpose that I use those firearms for. Nothing else. They are not my primary carry guns. Okay, so I guess you probably get the point on that one. I feel like I'm kind of getting to the rambling stage here, so I'll move on to the next topic about carrying big guns. So this new lifestyle of carrying a gun, and it really is a lifestyle, folks. I'm a firm believer in that, that I think it just completely changes your life in many different ways. There's a lot of changes that come with that. And, you know, I'm not of the belief that you're going to be facing an organized mob or terrorists. I don't think that that's the likelihood. If you're a civilian like me and you're just going about your daily business, you know, I'm not saying that can't happen, but that's not kind of what I'm thinking is likely to happen. But I want you to think about this. Carry the gun that you want to fight with if you have to. You know, I mean, let's assume that you knew you were going to go into a gunfight, right? We don't. We don't know, and we certainly don't go out looking for that. But the way I want you to think about what gun to carry and what method to carry it is to think about what would you take if you knew you were going to get into a gunfight. Okay? I mean, whatever happened to carrying actual fighting guns? That's what I want to talk about. I mean, if I never read another post on the internet, or if I never read another article ever about the latest, greatest, lightweight, super lightweight gun, pocket gun, or completely disappear gun, and stuff like that, if I never see another one of those, fine, that's great. I'll be happy. Because, let me tell you, when a fight comes to me, again, I hope it doesn't, when a fight comes to me, though, I want to have a substantial piece in my hand. I don't want to have some featherweight, gun if I can help it. Now, I'm not trying to tell you how to live your life. You know, I'm not trying to lecture you or anything like that. That's not my style. I'm just trying to kind of give you some suggestions. And one of my goals with this show all the time is to get you thinking and thinking analytically about what you do. So think about this. If you know you're going to be a fight and you can't take a long gun, that's the concept. If you know you're going to be in a gunfight but you cannot have a long gun, which is why handguns are so popular, because they're so portable and they're so easy to carry, what would you want to have? Would you want to have a little Kel-Tec 32 or 380 or a little car or a little Ruger LCP? And, you know, congratulations to the winner of the Ruger LCP. And, on my Freedom Raffle. But, you know, I hope that does not become the primary carry gun. You know, would you want to have a little five-shot snubby 38 revolver? If you knew you were going to be in a fight, if you knew you're going to one, and the crap is going to hit the fan and it's going to get ugly, you know, do you want those little guns? Or do you want a 40 caliber that holds 17 rounds? You know, do you want an XDM 40 caliber? Do you want to have an M&P 45 with 13 rounds, whatever, of 45 ACP? And think about it. When people typically go to the shooting range, what do they shoot? All right, next time you go to a shooting range, look around and see what guns people are shooting. You know what they typically take? They typically take a gun and they shoot whatever it is that they enjoy shooting the most. Oftentimes, it's a full-size pistol. So if you're going to go to the range and you're going to shoot what you enjoy shooting the most, then why not carry that? That's my point. Why not figure out a way to carry that? If you're going to train with a gun, and you're going to go to the range with a gun, and you're going to shoot it, and that's where you're going to get most of your trigger time and most of your rounds down range, if that's going to be with a full-size or a mid-size pistol, why not carry that? Because that's what you're going to be best at shooting. So my point here is carry the big pistol. And by big pistols, I'm talking about Glock 17s and 19s or 23s. You know, I'm talking about M&Ps in 9mm or 40. I'm talking about, you know, 4-inch XDs. I'm talking about commander-sized 1911s. And not the 3-inch 1911s, but you know, the 4-inch 1911s. Those are the types of guns that I'm talking about. You know, the SIGs, the SIG 250s and the SIG 229s. And guns like that. That I guess that's kind of what I'm defining for purposes of this podcast. What I'm defining big pistols. And they are big pistols when you compare them to the LCPs and the Kel-Tecs and the Kar P380s and the SIG 238s and stuff like that. Okay? Dress around the gun. Don't try to look like some kind of an 18-year-old with skin-tight jeans and a skin-tight shirt and stuff like that. I mean, that's just not... You know, you can look normal these days and blend in with the rest of the group when you dress and still be carrying a full-size pistol. It really doesn't take much effort. I know a lot of people will look at their full-size or their compact-size, mid-size pistol and look at it and go, man, how could I carry that? Well, I mean, you know, if you want to dress, if you want to put on a skin-tight Under Armour shirt and jeans that you have to paint on, then you're not going to be able to carry your medium-sized pistol. But obviously, like a lot of people dress, you know, it's not impolite to have an untucked shirt anymore. As a matter of fact, untucked shirts are the style. If you want to wear, if you want to wear a straight-tailed untucked shirt and cargo shorts or cargo pants, especially if they're neatly pressed, I get away with wearing cargo pants for business. Nice, neatly pressed cargo pants that are excellent for concealed carry. I do business. I do my sales work in pants like that. You know, women, you can put some creativity into it, and I know a lot of women that carry mid-size and full-size pistols, and they do it just very well, and they're concealed, and you would never know. So it doesn't take a tremendous amount of effort. And especially with a plethora of fantastic holsters and excellent belts. I mean, this is kind of like the golden age of concealed carry, in my opinion. There's so much being made out there. There's so many holster choices. There are so many gun choices, so many belt choices. The way that we can dress now is so much more appropriate for concealed carry. It's just, you know, as the environment and as the world gets more casual, which it seems it is in its dress, as the world gets more casual, I think it gets more conducive to concealed carry. And even those of you who listen to this podcast, that if you're a guy, you have to wear a suit all the time. Well, if you got to wear a suit all the time, you're going to have a coat on most of the time. Well, guess what? You can conceal a nice-sized pistol underneath your coat. And if you get a good tuckable holster, you can tuck it in if you have to take your coat off. You can tuck your shirt in. The MTAC holster and the Crossbreed Super Tucks are fantastic for that, because you can tuck your dress shirt in over it, and only the clips are showing. And if you blouse your shirt properly, you can cover up those clips as well for the very short time that you have to take your coat off. So there's such a great plethora of choices. I guess what I'm trying to say is, don't reduce yourself to sticking that 380 in your pocket and that's all you carry. You don't have to do that most of the time, in my humble opinion. So if you're a first-time concealed carry holder, and you're just now getting started carrying a gun, I know there's a lot of you that listen to this show because you email me. I know you're out there. And you're relatively new to this. Try not to get too frustrated by hiding your gun. Like I said, remember the 21-day rule. Build the habit. And remember why you carry the gun in the first place. And even those of you who have been carrying for a long time, remember, why do you carry this handgun? What is it? You know, what's the reason? Protection from muggers or thugs, you know, or the ever-growing threat of roving street gangs and so forth? You know, think about it. Think about if you're conducting business or you're eating at a restaurant or you're at a shopping mall or whatever, and sometimes you have your family members along with you, right? What if you're out to dinner with your family? You're out to dinner with your spouse and your kids are with you. You're shopping and your kids are with you, all right? And all of a sudden, something happens. You're attacked. God forbid. That's why you carry your gun, folks. How could you live with yourself if you didn't have your fighting gun and your family's with you and you guys are attacked for some reason? You know, I don't like to be paranoid, but I think of scenarios. I think, you know, what if I'm sitting in this big restaurant having some good Mexican food, there's a bunch of people in here, and some jerk walks in with an AK-47 because he's got a chip on his shoulder and he wants to shoot the place up because he's mad at somebody, and all I got is my little pocket 380 on me. Then what? You know, I mean, yes, it's better than nothing. Of course it's better than nothing. And I've made a pretty good case for mouse guns, that they're better than nothing, and they're good backups. You know what, folks? If a guy walks in with an AR or an AK, and he wants to, extract some revenge on somebody, and he's coming in because he's pissed off, and he doesn't care, he doesn't value his life, and he doesn't value anybody else's life, and he wants to shoot up the establishment that you're in, or that I'm in, I'd rather have my Glock 19, I'd rather have a Glock 17, I'd rather have a full-size 1911, or a commander-size 1911, or an M&P 45 compact, or a 357 SIG with 13 rounds of it of any kind. I would much rather have that facing a thug like that coming in than anything else in my hand, like a little mouse gun or a little Derringer or a 22 or anything like that. So I think I've kind of made the point here. Carry the big guns whenever you possibly can, folks. There's no size limit on the gun that you can carry. When you get your concealed carry license, your concealed carry license is good for any size gun, as long as it can be concealed, as long as it's considered a handgun, as long as it doesn't have a barrel that's considered to be a rifle. All right, and I'm pretty sure that anything less than 8 inches or something like that is considered a handgun. It's considered a pistol, a barrel of less than 8 inches, probably considered a pistol. So if you can conceal it, carry it, and make it the biggest thing that you can conceal. So with that, I want to say thanks for listening to yet another episode of the Handgun World Show. I'm Bob Main, and the reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Thanks for tuning in, folks. Catch you next week. Bye-bye.